headlines, Hamas says a shooting attack in Al-Quds has injured 9 Israeli settlers, which was a natural response to the Israeli crimes. At least 41 people are killed and over 50 others wounded in a fire inside a church in the Egyptian city of Giza. And North Korea slams the UN chief's comments about the denuclearization of Pyongyang. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. We're beginning our bulletin in the East-occupied Al-Quds, where there has been a shooting incident. At least 9 people have been said to have sustained injuries. 3 of them are in critical condition. The pre-dawn incident happened when a gunman opened fire on a bus in the old city of Al-Quds. Israeli officials are branding it a terror attack. Gaza-based Palestinian resistance movements have hailed the attack as courageous. Hamas is calling it a natural response to Israeli crimes against Palestinians and holy Muslim sites. The Islamic Jihad says it is part of resistance against the occupiers. Last week, a 3-day Israeli assault on the Gaza Strip killed nearly 50 Palestinians. Israeli forces have also recently stepped up raids in the West Bank, killing nearly 60 Palestinians since late March. Over the same periods, attacks on Israeli targets have also killed 19 people. From Ramallah, our correspondent Mona Kendall gives us the latest about the shooting attack.
Well, as you have mentioned, at least 9 Israeli settlers were wounded during this anti-Israel operation and shooting that was carried out early Sunday, or after midnight Saturday, in Al-Quds, in 3 different parts of the old town of Al-Quds. A Palestinian opened fire using his gun at an Israeli bus, then an Israeli vehicle in Al-Quds. The Israeli soldiers raided Silwan neighborhood in Al-Quds and other neighborhoods in Al-Quds. They arrested a number of Palestinians, and later the Israeli military said that 28-year-old Palestinian Amir Saidawi from Al-Quds has turned himself to the Israeli soldiers or to the Israeli police after the Israeli troops arrested family members from Al-Quds. He turned himself in, and as well as his arm. According to the Israelis, this Palestinian young man is being interrogated, but according to some Israeli media, they are not 100% sure that he was the perpetrator. However, the interrogation is still going on.
Now, in the Gaza Strip, our correspondent Hashaf Shannon tells us how the news of the Al-Quds attack was received in the blockaded Palestinian territory.
The Palestinian resistance groups have welcomed the shooting operation in occupied Al-Quds, describing it as a heroic operation. Hamas spokesman Fawzi Barhoum said that the operation Al-Quds is a natural response to the arrogance of the Israeli regime and the crimes of the settlers and the daily attacks against Palestinians. And he also said that the Palestinians are fully aware that only resistance, specifically armed resistance, is the best way to fight the occupation and liberate Palestinian lands. Another Hamas official in charge of the Al-Quds file, Mohammed Hamada, he said that this operation comes in response to the massacre that the Israeli regime carried out in Gaza over a week ago, and also to the assassination of a Palestinian resistance fighter in Nablus.
Mary Grossman believes Palestinians have every right to act in self-defense when they are being constantly attacked by Israeli troops.
You don't have to be an international lawyer. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that if your neighbors, your family members, your people are constantly targeted by men in uniform with automatic weapons who shoot them dead, very often using snipers from a distance, shooting at children who are doing nothing that qualifies as a threat, it's only natural that there will come a breaking point at which people will respond against those who are tormenting them, and we're certainly well past that point, and we're now starting to see acts of armed resistance as matters escalate here in occupied Palestine, and of course it's only going to get worse. And it's not surprising that what we hear from the opposition is characterization of anything that Palestinians do as terrorism, while they continue to justify their murderous acts, their crimes against humanity committed by their own men in uniform under instructions from the highest level of the occupation government.
At least 41 people have been killed in a huge fire at a church in Egypt's second largest city, Giza. Most of those killed were reportedly children. Dozens were also injured. Police say that the initial investigation blames an electrical short circuit. Some 5,000 worshippers are said to have gathered for mass when the blaze erupted. It blocked an entrance to the church, causing a stampede. Fire services say the blaze is now under control. Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi called the incident a tragic accident. March last year, at least 20 people died in a blaze in a textile factory in the capital, Cairo. Kuwait has appointed an ambassador to Iran after a six-year hiatus, which fence-mending talks between Tehran and Riyadh show signs of progress. Kuwaiti Ambassador Badr Abdullah al-Mukanke handed his credentials to the Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian in Tehran. Iran already has an ambassador in Kuwait. The Arab country recalled its top envoy to Tehran in 2016 in solidarity with Saudi Arabia. That year, Tehran-Riyadh relations were severed over a Saudi execution of prominent Shia cleric Nimr al-Nimr. The two countries are now engaged in talks to mend their ties. Iran has described the negotiations as positive, expressing hope that they will lead to a normalization of ties between the two Muslim countries. North Korea criticizes the UN chief's call for a complete and verifiable denuclearization of Pyongyang during a visit to the neighboring South. The North has dismissed the remarks by Antonio Guterres as dangerous, accusing him of supporting the hostile policies of the United States. According to Pyongyang, the UN chief's comments lack impartiality and fairness. North Korea says an irreversible denuclearization of the country would be a breach of its sovereignty. Guterres also was in South Korea on a two-day visit, expressing his commitment to the denuclearization of the North, calling it a fundamental objective to bring peace, security, and stability to the whole region. Washington and Seoul have for a while raised concerns about Pyongyang preparing to carry out what would be its seventh nuclear test. Thousands of South Korean progressives and unionists have gathered in downtown Seoul to protest against joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises scheduled to begin on August 22nd. Labor leaders call for the end of such drills, warning that the Korean Peninsula is inching towards a nuclear war. Frank Smith reports.
Thousands of South Korean unionists and their progressive supporters rallied in downtown Seoul to protest against joint U.S.-South Korea war games planned for later this month. The drills will be the largest in years and follow the May election of President Yoon Suk-yeol, who's promised to take a hard line with North Korea. Union leaders worry about risks.
The threat of nuclear war is growing on the Korean peninsula. Conservative forces of Yoon Suk-yeol in South Korea and those in the U.S. are frantically conducting aggressive war drills in the sky, the land and the sea, and are about to start large-scale joint military exercises aimed at the invasion of North Korea. We must stamp out this behavior of anti-reunification forces.
While many South Koreans, especially supporters of President Yoon on the right, favor close ties with the U.S., large numbers also argue the U.S. military and the country's alliance with Washington prevent the improvement of ties with North Korea and generate tension.
We not only oppose the war exercises, but we want the U.S. forces, Korea, which is actually controlling and interfering with the Korean Peninsula, to leave this land. We believe that only then will the 80 million Koreans from both North and South be able to live peacefully.
The drills will reportedly involve a U.S. aircraft carrier strike group with extensive field training to include amphibious maneuvers. South Korea has also been training alongside U.S. forces with recently acquired American F-35 Joint Strike Fighters. In an effort to strengthen the U.S.-South Korea alliance, military officials from Seoul and Washington will meet to discuss the deployment of U.S. strategic assets and extended deterrence, which refers to the deployment of U.S. nuclear weapons in the defense of South Korea. Frank Smith, Seoul.
A huge fire in the Armenian capital Yerevan has left at least one dead and over 20 others injured. The fire has sent towering clouds of smoke over the city center where it began. Still no official word on the cause of the fire, but reports say two blasts ripped through a fireworks warehouse in a retail market. Local officials say there are an unknown number of people trapped under the rubble. Armenian agencies, ministry, and a team of firefighting trucks has been dispatched to the area. In recent years, the United States has fought wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Pakistan, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen. And those are just the ones that the Pentagon has officially acknowledged. The actual scope of American war-making is much wider. A new research has revealed that the U.S. has undertaken almost 400 military interventions since its founding in 1776. Until 2019.
How many wars is the United States fighting right now? Well, the answer is zero, as under the Constitution, Congress must declare war, and the last countries that Congress declared war on were Bulgaria, Romania, and Hungary in 1942. 8 decades and what seems to be zero wars. Any countries with such a record must be one of the most peaceful places on earth. But as history has shown, this is not the case with the US, as it is fighting and has waged wars on many countries across the world. It just doesn't want to call them wars. Over the last 20 years, the US has dropped an average of 46 bombs and missiles on other countries each day. And now, a new study has revealed that more than a quarter of the 400 wars which the U.S. has sugarcoated in terms such as a military-led operation, police actions, or humanitarian interventions have taken place in West Asia and Africa. So it seems that as Americans struggle to address urgent needs at home, Their governments have committed them to endless wars in an attempt to support what seems to be one of the key pillars of the U.S., the military-industrial complex. The
U.S. has tried to be on the first hand, with an image of also being seen as a global policeman, which came and, of course, as some have argued, it's done more harm than good. When you look into the global dominance and production of all these weapons and also use of it in terms of interventions, you see a situation whereby U.S. wants to be the first, to be seen the most powerful nation in the world, to be seen as the one that can intervene and maybe make a difference, whichever difference whose interest it serves. Of course, they will have to define that. It's a bit a gray area. You cannot define it very clearly.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In Britain, leaked documents predict crop failure rates of up to 50% as United Kingdom's water companies resist calls to prioritise food production. We are prepared for you an article written by Helena Horton. The piece is titled Mass Crop Failures Expected in England as Farmers Demand Hosepipe Bans. Experts have warned of widespread crop failures across England as charities and farmers criticise water companies for dithering over hosepipe bans despite drought being declared across much of the country. On Friday, 12th of August, Britain's Environment Agency classified 8 of the 14 areas of England as being in a drought. Despite this, water companies including Anglian Water, Southern Water and South West Water have not brought in hosepipe bans. Thames Water said it does not plan to expedite a hosepipe ban expected in the coming days. Leaked documents seen by The Guardian from a meeting of the National Drought Group show concerning figures about the state of farming in England. Half of the potato crop is expected to fail as it cannot be irrigated, and even crops that are usually drought-tolerant, such as maize, have been failing. The group was told irrigation options are diminishing with reservoirs being emptied fast and losses of 10 to 50% are expected for crops including carrots, onions, sugar beet, apples and hops. Milk production is also down nationally because of a lack of food for cows and wildfires are putting large areas of farmland at risk. Farmers are deciding whether to drill crops for next year, and there are concerns that many will decide not to, with dire consequences for the 2023 harvest. Cattle and other livestock are expected to be slaughtered early at lower weights, because it is likely that farmers will run out of feed for them in winter. One of the driest areas of England is East Anglia, which is also home to much of England's farming, including more than two-thirds of its sugar beet crop, and a third of its potato crop. However, Anglian Water has ruled out a host-by ban for this summer, claiming that it has good levels of water in reservoirs. A spokesperson said, "Today's declaration of drought across the region we supply serves to underline the seriousness of the situation. But because of the investments that we've made and the support of our customers, we still do not envisage needing a hosepipe ban in our region this summer." But farmers disagree. Tom Bradshaw, the deputy president of the National Farmers Union, NFU, said, "We have members who can't extract irrigation water, but still in East Anglia there is no hosepipe ban. We can't believe that we aren't allowed to irrigate to grow the fruit and vegetables the country needs, but there is no ban on excessive consumer use." He suggested the government should be intervening to make sure that water companies did not part to mitigate the drought, adding, "The Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, or DEFRA, ministers need to prioritise food production. Feeding people is critically important." He noted, "The minister, Steve Double, was on the call recently and we made it clear to him that we need to plan on there being a dry winter and we need to fill our reservoirs or next year's food production could be in the balance. Irrigated vegetables are something a lot of people will be eating. If we don't have irrigation, there will be very low availability of vegetables." Stuart Singleton White from the Angling Trust agreed, saying that chalk streams in East Anglia were facing perhaps irreversible damage due to the dry conditions. Stuart Singleton White said, "It's still not being taken seriously. Take East Anglia, pretty much every chalk stream except the Stifke is at exceptionally low levels. They have had next to no rainfall at all and have some of the most agriculture in the country. So need more water for irrigation. Yet for some reason, Anglian Water has not put a hosepipe ban in place, and a drought being announced won't change that. We are in the position where areas classified as in the drought are not putting hosepipe bans in place." Stuart Singleton White has called for a hosepipe ban across the whole drought-stricken region, adding, "There are still a number of water companies in the drought area who claim they have enough water and they don't need to bring in hosepipe bans, but that is just going to confuse customers." He said, "A hosepipe ban across the whole drought region would start to send the right message about us all playing our part to conserve water." The areas under drought measures are Devon and Cornwall, Solent and the South Downs, Kent and South London, Hertfordshire and North London, East Anglia, Thames, Lincolnshire and Northamptonshire, and the East Midlands. The Environment Agency expects a further two areas, that is Yorkshire and West Midlands, will move into drought later in August. The group met earlier this summer to discuss the lack of rainfall and decided to put the country in prolonged dry weather status, the first of four emergency dry weather stages, and one step before drought. Now the country has been tipped into that second stage. This means water rationing may take place across the country with fewer barriers for water companies who wish to ban customers from using hosepipes and washing the car with tap water. More severe measures can also be put in place at this stage, including banning the use of sprinklers for cleaning the buildings, vehicles and windows. The group contains representatives from water companies, the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, or DEFRA, the Environment Agency, the National Farmers Union, NFU, Natural England, CCW, Ofwat, Water UK, and the Drinking Water Inspectorate, as well as Angling Trust and the Rivers Trust. Previous dry summers have been offset by wet autumns, meaning the worst effects on water supply have not hit. Those present at the meeting were told that that was unlikely to be the case this year, with arid conditions predicted to continue due to climate breakdown. Slides from the Environment Agency say an increased chance of warm conditions through August to October is consistent with an increased westerly flow from warmer than average seas and our warming climate. With a typical northwest wetter to southeast drier gradation in rainfall most likely, there are no strong signals for a significant amelioration of current dry conditions. Catherine Sefton, a hydrologist at the UK Centre for Ecology and Hydrology, said, in the southeast of England, the continued dry weather means that many river flows remain notably or exceptionally low, and hydrological forecasts suggest this situation will persist over the next few months. Catherine Sefton said, where river flows are supported by groundwater that recharges during the winter months, the impact of dry weather is reduced, but a continuation of below average rainfall into a second winter would likely result in serious hydrological and environmental drought, with further intensification of water supply restrictions and fish rescues that we are starting to see in the southeast of England. The last time a drought was announced was in 2018, though research has not yet been conducted to determine whether this year's drought was caused by climate breakdown. The dry conditions and extreme heat in 2018 were found by the Meteorological Office to have been made 30 times more likely by climate change. There have been 5 consecutive months of below average rainfall across all geographic regions in England and above average temperatures. River flows, groundwater levels and reservoir stocks all decreased during July. 13 Environmental Agency monitored indicator rivers are at the lowest levels ever recorded, and soil moisture deficit is comparable to that seen at the end of the 1976 drought. Scotland and Wales have similar drought reaction groups, which are also understood to be meeting this summer after drier than usual conditions.
Returns to Alcamp Riderless.
Azuru Sayyidi.
The ocean of dua.
Al Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam. Ziyaratan minni wa niyabatan an walidai.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyaratu Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyaratu al-Ashura. So stay with us.
Bari'tu ila Allah wa ilaykum minhum wa min ashya'ihim wa atba'ihim wa awliya'ihim ya Aba Abdullah inni silmun liman salamakum.
listeners, as you were with us previously, we were discussing this excerpt of Ziyaratul Ashura. Ya Aba Abdullah, inni silmun liman salamakum wa harbun liman harabakum ila yawm al-qiyamah. O Aba Abdullah, I am at peace with he who is at peace with you, and I am at war with he who is at war with you until the day of resurrection. In this regard, specifically in the previous episode, we discussed the spirit of this part of Ziyara, which means why Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his companions rose to reject the prevailing government of Yazid. Imam alayhi salam knew that this system, this government is trying to destroy Islam. They are doing their best to deprive the Muslims of their rights. They wanted to undermine the rights of the Muslims. So Imam alayhi salam practically expressed his bara'ah from these traitors and their allies. Imam practically taught us the meaning of harbun liman harabakum. That is why man, if follows the life-giving teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, will be endowed with the knowledge of Allah. He will be helped in doing his obligatory and recommended acts, and he will be helped in avoiding sins and staying away from the pollutions. He will be helped in all these orders and recommendations of the Almighty Allah. Let us look at some instances. For example, Salman, the Persian, he was a Zoroastrian at first, and then became a Christian. And then, by following the Ahlul Bayt's teachings, he reached such a supreme station about which the Holy Prophet says, Salmanu minna Ahlul Bayt. Salman is from us, the Ahlul Bayt. Or Abu Dharr, for example. He was a shepherd who, by resorting to Ahlul Bayt, reached such a supreme station about which the Holy Prophet says, no one under the sky or on the earth is as truthful as Abu Dharr. So by getting to know Allah through the Ahlul Bayt, all those people will become Allah's true servants, and they will reach a station that they will be with the Ahlul Bayt until the judgment day. That is why we express and say in this part, إِنِّي سِلْمٌ لِمَنْ سَالَمَكُمْ وَحَرْمٌ لِمَنْ حَارَبَكُمْ إِلَى يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ. Only by following this path, one will be able to reach salvation. And only by being adherents of Ahlul Bayt, he will be in such a station until the judgment day.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is, do not allow tyranny. Do not allow evil doing. Do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah. He appreciates Him. He understands His dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we are talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Now let us have a look at what Imam Hussein alayhi salam has said in a tradition. He alayhi salam says, "Inna Allah astafa Muhammadan ala khalqihi." Allah chose Muhammad for his people. Wa akramahu bi nubuwwatihi. Allah honored him with prophethood. Wa akhtarahu li risalatihi. And chose him for his mission. Thumma qabadahu Allahu ilayhi wa qad nasaha li ibadihi. Allah then took his soul after he had advised his servants. وَبَلَّغَ مَا أُرْسِلَ بِهِ And he had communicated to them what he had been sent for. Then Imam says, وَكُنَّا أَهْلَهُ وَأَوْلِيَاءَهُ وَأَوْصِيَاءَهُ وَوَرَثَتَهُ وَأَحَقَّ النَّاسِ بِمَقَامِهِ فِي النَّاسِ And we, his household, are his vicegerents. Is his inheritors, and the worthiest of holding his position. فَاسْتَأْثَرَ عَلَيْنَا قَوْمُنَا بِذَٰلِكَ فَرَضِينَا وَكَرِهْنَا الْفُرْقَةِ وَأَجَبْنَا الْعَافِيَةِ وَنَحْنُ نَعْلَمُ أَنَّا أَحَقُّ بِذَٰلِكَ We submitted to this bitter event. We dislike division and favor peace, although we know for sure that our claim to this right is more deserving than those who have taken it from us. As you can see, dear listeners, in this tradition, Imam Hussein alayhi salam introduces himself as the vicegerent of Prophet. So he is introducing the household of the Ahlul Bayt as true Imams, and the one who dislikes them will dislike Allah and will be misled. But as we said earlier, prior to being at peace with he who is at peace with Imam alayhi salam and being at war with he who is at war with Imam alayhi salam, we have to get to know the Imams, their household, and at the same time we have to recognize truly who the enemies are. Getting to know the Ahlul Bayt will lead to salvation, nearness to Allah, and a true understanding of Islam. In this relation, Imam Ali alayhi salam has said, أَسْعَدُ النَّاسِ مَنْ عَرَفَ فَضْلَنَا The happiest of people are those who recognize our superiority and excellence, those who sought nearness to Allah through us, those who loved us sincerely and acted according to what we called for. وَعَمِلَ بِمَا إِلَيْهِ نَدَبْنَا وَانْتَهَا عَمَّا عَنْهُ نَهَيْنَا And those who stop doing what we have prohibited. فَذَاكَ مِنَّا وَهُوَ فِي دَارِ الْمُقَامَةِ مَعْنَا Such people are from us, and they will be with us in the eternal paradise. That is why we have to say and recite this out loud, إِنِّي سِلْمٌ لِمَنْ سَالَمَكُمْ وَحَرْبٌ لِمَنْ حَارَبَكُمْ إِلَى يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ Until the day of resurrection. Thank you for staying with us. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ
أنت الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكي كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين الروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
Technology helps transform the global food production system and mitigates its impact on the environment. China's autonomous region of Tibet is turning barren land into fertile one using greenhouse technology. Once removed, Beinan County is now the largest off-season vegetable supplier in Tibet. The region has taken advantage of its highland conditions to develop a state-of-the-art agricultural structure. Beinong has now more than 2,200 modern vegetable greenhouses and nearly 12,000 hectares of planting area, some built at unimaginable altitude. But one cannot deny the role of railways and highway transport for making this county a hub for organic vegetables. The income of locals has also been significantly improved, and they are now living a happy and prosperous life. If you're a private collector of wild animals, there is good news for you. A Pakistani zoo is auctioning off a dozen lions due to a lack of money to feed them and a space to house them. Lahore Safari Zoo currently has so many big cats that they have to take turns accessing paddocks. Officials say auctioning them will free up space and also reduce expenses. Zoo is currently housing 29 lions. The lions auctioned this week will be between 2 to 5 years of age. Each big cat is estimated to fetch around 150,000 Pakistan rupees. That's not too much, as some zookeepers claim. Even conservationists have expressed anger over auctioning lions to private collectors instead of transferring them to other zoos. Happy news for zoo goers in Nicaragua. Two adorable baby tapirs are born at a country's national zoo south of Managua, adding attractions to the visitors. Two endangered tapirs, a male and a female, were born hours apart at the weekend. In a video shared by the zoo, one of the newborns is seen suckling and walking near her mother. The director of the zoo says the babies are yet to be named but are in perfect health. Tapirs inhabit jungle and forest regions of South and Central America, with one species inhabiting Southeast Asia. They look something like pigs with trunks, but they are actually related to horses and rhinos. Nicaragua launched a project that seeks to conserve this animal in danger of extinction due to hunting and the destruction of natural habitat. Now we'll take you to mine-riddled French island, Chazoms, which is emerging from the ruins and gradually turning into workers' paradise. Chazoms, close to the port city of Saint-Malo, has an amazing landscape but remains uninhabited as it saw a devastating bombardment by the Allies during the World War II. The Nazi-occupied island was victim of the most bombings per square meter. Known as Martyred and Forbidden Island, it was opened only in 2018 after extensive demining efforts allowed the opening of a marked path. Now, every year, thousands of day trippers make the short boat journey, marveling at the spectacular maritime views and flourishing wildlife there. The safe area still makes up just 3% of the island, but it lets visitors wander between rusty cannons and bunkers. Some workers say they hope the trail will be lengthened to allow a complete tour of the island.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The Jamtal Glacier in Austria has been losing around 1 meter of its surface annually. Scientists say the ice is a precious archive that is simply melting away and are surveying the area. Austrian mountain researchers say the glaciers contain an invaluable trove of ancient frozen leaves and twigs and other scientific treasures that can be lost forever. They say the time capsules, including the remote Jamtal Valley, are falling victim to climate change. In the 1990s, tourists found that 5,300-year-old mummy of Iceman near the same area. According to the international data, global warming has raised temperatures in Europe's highest mountains by nearly 2 degrees Celsius in the past 120 years. French rescuers are racing against time to save a beluga whale stranded in Seine River near Paris. The beluga was first spotted stuck between two locks in the river from Paris to the English Channel on Tuesday. Specialists say the animal is undernourished and is refusing food. Warm water is also worsening the health of this creature, which is normally seen near Norway, some 3,000 kilometers to the north. Rescuers say they have only up to 48 hours to save the whale. They are now looking at the possibility of taking the beluga out of the water, treating it, and eventually transferring it out to the sea.
There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day since the menu largely includes local flavors.
Visitors and staff at a French zoo have celebrated the first birthday of twin pandas. The young bears were given a tasty treat of frozen cakes and other treats. As part of the event, 5 lucky visitors were also given the chance to participate in the celebrations behind the scenes with golden tickets. Other festivities included face painting and panda-themed activities. The baby pandas were born last August and now weigh 23 and 28 kilograms. They live with their mother at Zoo Parc de Bouval, where they have been on display since their arrival in 2021.
Mm-hmm. Many people develop deeper relationships with four-legged animals, treating them like their own kids. A Kenyan conservationist is one of them. 33-year-old Salome Lemazia has been a community ranger in Sierra Conservancy, northern Kenya, since 2015. The mother of four is stationed at a rhino sanctuary and is in charge of protecting a male rhino named Loijipo. At just a few days old, Loijipo was abandoned by his mother, possibly due to her being spooked by something. After being cared for, he was returned to the sanctuary under surveillance in an attempt to rewild him. 3 years on from his release into Sierra Wilderness, he is taking his time to carve out his territory, of course, with the help of Salome. Excited spectators gather at the Solberg Airport in the U.S. for the 39th New Jersey Lottery Festival of Ballooning.
We have about 45 balloons here today, including these spectacular special shapes. Our signature New Jersey Lottery Sunny Days balloon. You can see the tiger. Unicorn is hiding behind there. Tasmanian Devil, unique photo panda. We are having a spaceship. There's Billy the Kid. Spectacular presentation. You won't believe your skies this weekend.
Dozens of hot air balloons were test inflated in preparation for the real deal. The festival is considered the largest summertime event in New Jersey. Reddington City officials have predicted about 170,000 people will join the festival over the weekend. Weather forecasts say the sky are gentle enough for over 100 balloons to take flight in the morning and evening in mass ascents. And no one is more excited than the festival producer, who has been planning the event for months.
Including these spectacular special shapes. The balloons bring out the kid in everyone. You know, I've done this for a long time. This is the 39th annual one. But still, when I hear that propane whirring and these balloons going up, it makes the hair on my arm stand up.
The producer says these balloons will be handled by professional pilots and other balloons will be available for rides. The festival will last for 3 days, ending with food vendors, games, amusement rides, and other entertainment. There will also be a massive fireworks display, as well as a nighttime feature of glowing balloons. The annual festival is the largest seasonal hot air balloon festival in North America. It draws in thousands of visitors every year.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.